right, Psalm 39. For the director of music, for Jeduthun, a psalm of David, I said, I will watch my ways and keep my tongue from sin. I'll put a muzzle on my mouth as long as the wicked are in my presence. But when I was silent and still, not even saying anything good, my anguish increased. My heart grew hot within me. And as I meditated, the fire burned. Then I spoke with my tongue, show me, O Lord, my life's end and the number of my days. Let me know how fleeting is my life. You have made my days a mere handbreadth. The span of my years is nothing before you. Each man's life is but a breath. Man is a mere phantom. As he goes to and fro, he bustles about, but only in vain. He heaps up wealth, not knowing who will get it. But now, Lord, what do I look for? My hope is in you. Save me from all my transgressions. Do not make me the scorn of fools. I was silent. I would not open my mouth, but you are the one who has done this. Remove your scourge from me. I am overcome by the blow of your hand. You rebuke and discipline men for their sin. You consume their wealth like moth. Each man is but a breath. Hear my prayer, O Lord. Listen to my cry for help. Do not be deaf to my weeping, for I dwell with you as an alien, a stranger, as all my fathers were. Look away from me, that I may rejoice again before I depart and am no more. How are you doing? Are you going to stay? The sermon is a brief message tonight. As it happens, it is brief for a variety of reasons, but that might not be a bad thing, eh? So in the psalm that we've just read, the person is obviously suffering, human being struggling with their circumstances. And the first impulse of the psalmist in verses 1 to 3 is that they want to complain. And sometimes you think about complaining and you realize that possibly occasionally, rather than complaining, being silent is a better option. Do I speak or do I keep silent? Do I complain or do I bite my lip? Do I put a muzzle on my mouth? Sometimes it's better to speak. Sometimes it's better to be silent. There is a time to be silent. There is a time to speak. And as the psalmist is silent, he has time to think. And he thinks in this psalm of the brevity of life. Just a moment, things can just go wrong, can't they? We kind of expect to be up here reading a reading, and then suddenly we're on the carpet. We can't reckon on how the next moment is going to be. And we can't reckon on the next day. We don't know how long our future might be. So he begins to meditate about that and also begins to think about what it is to hope in God. The odd thing is, as often in the psalms, that we see that the psalmist's faith is a little bit like one of those lights which is connected to a plug that is not entirely wired properly. The light flickers on and flickers off. It says something about my DIY skills, perhaps. Flickering on and off. Someone has said about this psalm that the psalms speak about the Lord reigning. But the psalmist doesn't always feel that they can identify with God's reign. Sometimes we can be haunted by the absence of God, and sometimes we can be haunted by the presence of God. Sometimes God seems too close, threateningly close. And sometimes we can almost long that he actually doesn't take too much notice of us. He actually lets us be. The psalmist, so often, and we see it here, is wrestling with his feelings about God and God's dealings in his life. There's an ode spiritual that says, "Sometimes I feel like a motherless child. Sometimes I feel like a motherless child. Oh Lord, sometimes I feel like a motherless child. Then I get on my knees and pray." And the first three verses of Psalm 39 had this kind of tension of, I want to speak, I'm going to be silent. I want to speak, I want to be silent. And then finally, at the end of verse 3, then I spoke with my tongue. And the psalmist prays. He's finally speaking. Show me, Lord, my life's end and the number of my days. Let me know how fleeting my life is. And of course, this reminds us a little bit of our motto text a while ago. Teach us the number of our days aright that we might gain a heart of wisdom from Psalm 90. Show me, Lord, my life's end and the number of my days. Let me know how fleeting my life is. In fact, the psalmist says it's really just like a breath. You have made my days a mere hand's breadth. The span of my years is nothing before you. Each man's life is but a breath, a mist or nothing. Scotch mist, perhaps. Nothing. Absolutely nothing. And that's what the writer James says, doesn't he, in his letter. Your life is like a mist that appears for a while and then disappears. We always hope that, don't we? We wake up first thing in the morning and we look out and there's nothing. It's not dark, it's just misty. And we're perhaps planning something on that day and we hope that the mist will dissipate because we want to see blue skies. But the life is like a mist too, just appearing for a brief time in the scheme of things and then disappearing. Show me my life. Show me what my life is before you. It is fleeting. It is quickly past. It's like a mist that appears and then disappears. Surely everyone goes around like a mere phantom. In vain they rush about, heaping up wealth without knowing whose it will finally be. All our busy rushing ends in nothing. Psalm 39, verse 6. We live with the fact, says the psalmist, that we will die. The one fact about life is that we die. It's the one thing you can be sure of. There is a time to be born, and there is a time to die. But now, Lord, what do I look for? My hope is in you. Now, it could be a really pessimistic thing to kind of talk about the fact that the only thing we can be sure of after birth is that we'll die. And the psalmist says, well, if that reality is before me, well, then what do I look for? I look for you. My hope is in you. My hope in life, every day of my life, and my hope on the final day of my life, is in you. If things are going to be good, if things are going to be better, if things are going to have meaning, it's because you have made them good and because you have given me meaning. I don't know about you, but when you think about the fact that your life is limited and that you will die, what do you think of? Perhaps one of the things you think of is that God knows everything about me. I'll one day need to answer for who I am, for what I've done. We think about the implications, perhaps, of the people we've hurt, the mistakes we've made, the people that we've been unhelpful towards, and so on. In fact, so often when I think back at the past, It's not my achievements I think of, but my failures. And as you think about life just shuttling by, what a stack of them we seem to have. And the psalmist says, save me. Save me from all my transgressions. Do not make me the scorn of fools. I was silent. I would not open my mouth, for you are the one who has done this. Some people don't want to come to church because it makes them feel guilty. Some people don't want to think about God because it makes them feel guilty. And of course, that's kind of obvious, really, isn't it? Because God is alive and good and holy, and we are not those things all of the time. When I think about you, God, when I'm silent before you, I'm reminded that there are things in my life that are displeasing to you. Save me from those things. Remove your heavy hand from me. Remove your scourge from me. I'm overcome by the blow of your hand. Sometimes, God, it feels as though you're against me. Sometimes when I think about my life, it feels as though your hand is pressing against me. Sometimes it seems as though you're not doing me favors. You're leading me into difficulty. You're not on my case, you're against me. You rebuke and discipline men for their sin. You consume their wealth like a moth. Each man is but a breath. It's possible that our experience of God is an experience of feeling withered before him, under the cosh, disciplined. It can feel as though perhaps God is displeased with us. That can be the experience of a human being in prayer. So the psalmist prays, hear my prayer, O Lord. Listen to my cry for help. Do not be deaf to my weeping. You know, if it's true that God is holy and so often we have unholy thoughts and actions and deeds, sometimes in God's presence we should not be surrounded with laughter, but maybe we should be surrounded with tears. Maybe we should weep more often about the things that make God weep. Maybe we ought to be more real about the fact that we are not what he wants us to be, and we're not even what we want us to be. Hear my prayer, O Lord. Listen to my cry for help. Be not deaf to my weeping. You know, I feel like a foreigner, a stranger, as were all my ancestors. Have you ever been in a situation where you've been in a group of people and everybody knows each other and you're the only person in the group that doesn't know anybody? You almost feel as though there's a sign around you, alien, foreigner, stranger. You know, you're not from around these parts, are you, as they say in movies? Hear my prayer, because sometimes I feel like a stranger, says the psalmist. Now, we've been thinking about the fact that Jesus prays the Psalms. Jesus prays the Psalms for us. Think about Jesus praying this particular psalm, praying those particular lines. I dwell with you as a foreigner, a stranger, as all my ancestors were. Jesus comes to the earth, and he comes to his own, and his own receive him not. He is rejected, even by some of his own family. He's rejected by the authorities of his own nation. He is rejected by us. He's rejected and goes to the cross. And upon the cross, he appears to be rejected by God the Father as well. My God, why have you forsaken me? The gospel says to us that Jesus has become a stranger for us. He has become a foreigner, an outsider for us, in order that we might be truly heard and welcomed by God. In Hebrews and 1 Peter, that little phrase about being a stranger, a foreigner, is picked up. That we who are exiles, strangers, are brought near. And in Hebrews 13, we hear these words. Here we have a lasting city. Here we have no lasting city, rather, but we seek the city that is to come. We have a place because Jesus came for us. We have a place because Jesus had no place to lay his head. Final part of the prayer. Look away from me that I may enjoy life again before I depart and am no more. What an odd prayer. God, look away from me. Get off my case. Get off my back. Look away from me that I may enjoy life again before I depart and am no more. Don't be so hard on me. Don't press me. Just give me a little bit of breathing space. Give me a little bit of air. Someone has said this, the morose reflection on the hopelessness of his situation gives way to a last despairing gasp for air. It is remarkable that God not only allows his creatures to complain to him of their ills, but actually records those wails in his word. The very presence of such prayers in Scripture is a witness to his understanding. He knows how people speak when they are desperate. Sometimes people are desperate. And the wonderful thing is, you can talk to God in your desperation, knowing that he will hear you. Before I finish my days, just let me have a little bit of joy in my life again. Someone has said that Psalm 39 articulates despair and hope simultaneously. In so doing, it portrays the way life really is, terrifyingly short, yet awesomely wonderful. God is not a scorekeeper of human rights and wrongs. He's making a list. He's checking it twice to see who's naughty and to see who's nice. No, he's not a scorekeeper of human rights and wrongs, but a partner with humility, with humanity in the complex matter of life. Life, terrifyingly short, yet awesomely wonderful. That's why the psalmist can say, and we can say, my hope is in you. Life is not always good. Life is not always brilliantly bright. But God is. God is. We are not always filled with hope. But God is always our hope. Coming back to Jesus, how do we experience living hope through Jesus? Through the resurrection? Well, the living hope that comes through the resurrection travels through Gethsemane and the veil of tears in Gethsemane. It travels through the cross and it travels through the cold tomb. But my hope is in you. Because for all the tears, for all the complaints, for all the feelings that things are not necessarily going our way, that sometimes we're kind of losing our grip on life, our hope is in God. What a wonderful thing it is as we think about our weakness and frailty as human beings, that the nature of our confidence, our security, is not on our grip on life, but his grip on our life. My hope is in you. Amen.